Continuing some extracts from Law and Grace by Brother Barling. The Day of Atonement. The seventh month was the greatest month of the year, as the special ritual of the first day made clear. It spoke preeminently of rest and redemption, but all the more necessary for that reason was some special observance on which the notion of expiation as the basis and condition of redemption could be given the prominence which it demanded. With due propriety, the law, both legislated for such a day, and also specified that it should fall within this particular month, in order that the ideas of expiation and of rest from sin should properly complement each other. On the tenth day of this seventh month there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be an holy convocation unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls, and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. The offering had to be, and it's laid out in Leviticus 16, for Aaron, the sin offering was one young bullock, and the burnt offering one ram, but for the nation, the sin offering was two kids of the goats, and the burnt offering again one ram. This offering, however, was not all that was peculiar to this day. It was the sin offering of atonement, and as such, of very special significance, as we shall now proceed to see. But in addition, there was to be an offering of one bullock, one ram, seven lambs, with their meal offering, and an additional goat for sin offering, and these were doubtless offered to mark the day as a holy convocation and by the priests dressed in their official livery. The sin offerings of Leviticus 16, however, were offered by the high priest alone, doubtless before the other, in keeping with the character of the day as one for afflicting the soul. They were, moreover, offered by the high priest, divested of all his distinctive priestly robes, except his turban. It is these offerings, and the peculiar ritual accompanying their presentation, which must engage our special attention now. This was a day of days for Israel, one for making atonement even for the sanctuary, because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel and because of their transgressions in all their sins. In the life of even the most scrupulous man, many moral and ceremonial offences must have been committed by him unwittingly, of which he had never become aware. Countless must therefore have been just the sins left unexpiated throughout the year by the standard offerings, each of them constituting an affront to God's holiness and defiling his dwelling place in their midst. But the expiation effected on this day was to embrace even those sins for the forgiveness of which the prescribed sacrifices had actually been offered once already. Here, the notion of expiation was to be ritually presented with altogether unique potency, so the rule was comprehensive and uncompromising. On that day shall the priest make an atonement for you to cleanse you, that ye may be clean from all your sins before the Lord. Thus, By one summary act of atonement, all Israel's sins were to be expiated together. Every member of the nation was to be simultaneously cleansed from them. For that very reason, God declared, "It shall be a Sabbath of rest unto you. You shall do no work in that same day, for it is a day of atonement, to make an atonement for you before the Lord your God." The connection between atonement and rest could not have been made closer. And the importance of the atonement as the condition of the rest was stressed by the ritual in the prominence which it gave to the presentation of the sin offering, the benefits of which were so great that they extended even to the stranger that sojourneth among you. Now, in all other cases, when sin offering was presented, some specific offence had occasioned its presentation and was publicly confessed in connection with it. This time, however, on account of the national character of the offering and the scope of its efficacy, no such specific confession was possible, though a general one was in fact made by the high priest on behalf of the entire nation. Such a confession, however, did not and could not suffice on its own. So, by special arrangement, the law contrived to make it valid by declaring this day to be not only a Sabbath of rest, but also a time for the afflicting of the soul. Both ritually, by fasting, and actually, by reminding himself consciously of his failure to attain the priestly ideal, each member of the nation was to express his remorse and desire for forgiveness, so that for him as an individual, the national offering should also be a personal one. The rule was explicit: whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted in that same day, he shall be cut off from among his people. It was to be the same for any who worked that day. "It shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest, and ye shall afflict your souls in the ninth day of the month, at even, from even unto even, and shall ye celebrate your Sabbath." The ritual of the presentation of the special offerings was highly significant. On this day, preeminently, the high priest was the representative of the nation as a whole. Not in its priestly capacity, however, for that would have been incongruous, seeing that his ministrations had on this occasion to do with sin, both in himself and those for whom he stood. So the entire priesthood was banned from the tabernacle. And even Aaron himself acted in special robes, different from those which normally distinguished him. These, however, like the others, were holy garments. So before putting them on, he had first to wash. The washing and the robes, including the mitre, together made clear that atonement in the real, as distinct from the ritual, sense could only be procured for Israel by one from among them who was actually morally perfect, who was in fact the very embodiment of the notion of holiness to the Lord, and had in consequence become also physically perfect. In proof that he was not that one, it was decreed, Aaron shall offer his bullock which is for himself and make an atonement for himself and for his house. Thus the Levitical priesthood had first to confess its limitations and inadequacy. On that basis only could Aaron qualify to take the people's place on this momentous day. Before slaying his own offering, he had to cast lots before God to see which of the two goats presented on behalf of the people should die as a sacrifice and which should be the scapegoat. This done, he killed his own sin offering, then burnt incense on a censer in the most holy place, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is upon the testimony that he die not. Here was the very presence of God, of him who is spirit. So a cloud of incense burnt on coals from off the altar had to cover the mercy seat when he approached it with the bullock's blood. And he shall take of the blood of the bullock and sprinkle it with his finger upon the mercy seat eastward. And before the mercy seat shall he sprinkle off the blood with his finger seven times. The sprinkling of the mercy seat with blood was a confession both of the fact that the law upon the tables of stone had been broken, and of the fact that death was the penalty for such breach of divine law. The sevenfold sprinkling before the mercy seat, on the other hand, was an appeal to God to be true to his covenant and to forgive his erring people absolutely in fulfillment of it. These preliminaries over, the goat of sin offering for the people was next killed, its blood manipulated in the same way, an atonement then made for all three divisions of the sanctuary in turn. This done, the ritual then continued with particular reference to the live goat, this being symbolically its dead partner, acting in a different capacity, since the same animal could not both forfeit its life to show the means of expiation and also serve to illustrate its effect. It fell to the live goat to illustrate the effect of expiation in the place of its dead partner. Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat and confess over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel and all their transgressions and all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat, and shall send him away by the hand of a fit man into the wilderness. And the goat shall bear upon him all their iniquities unto a land not inhabited. The goat, by now the embodiment of all Israel's sins in the year just ended, was then taken away from the sanctuary and camp, that is, from the presence and face of God. The ritual was transparent. The expiation effected by the blood of the first goat was shown by the departure of the second to have effected the utter removal of all Israel's sin from before God. The scope being far too comprehensive, as we have seen, for us to limit the expiation just to sins so far unatoned for. Now at last, it was possible for Aaron to resume his priestly robes and offer the burnt offering for himself, together with that for the people. Burn the fat of the sin offerings upon the altar, and arrange for the disposal of the carcasses of the bullock and dead goat outside the camp. The special festal offerings were probably then offered. And in later times, once every 50 years, this further rule also was observed. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. In the Day of Atonement shall ye make the trumpet sound throughout all your land.